Good afternoon, everybody. Can I welcome you all here today to another meeting of the Liberal Statutory Forum. I'm delighted to see you all here. What is, I think, a rather unique occasion when we often talk about topical issues, but largely from the point of view of people in this country who have views about what is happening elsewhere. Today we have a very topical and, I'm afraid, historic issue been going on for a long time. We will hear about the voices of those who were actually affected by it, and I think that it's a very important way of dealing or examining this particular problem. I'm going to hand over to Jack Straw, who is my colleague on the advisory board of the Liberal Statutory Forum, to chair this meeting. He needs no introduction, former Foreign Secretary, Home Secretary, just about everything you could think of, but on this occasion, former Foreign Secretary is the key, and he will take this meeting. I just wanted to say that our next event will take place next door, that's in the Lady Violet Room, next week on the Tuesday, the 25th of March, when Sir Dominic Astrid, who was our ambassador to Libya from 2011 to 2012, and from Egypt, from 2007 to 2011, he is going to give a talk which is called What Really Drives the Middle East and North Africa Today? Religion or Politics or Both? And What Next? I set that title. I think it's very challenging for him, but I think it would be worth coming to hear what his response is to it. If you'd like to attend, can you let Jacqueline Jinks know on your way out so that she can make arrangements for the smaller room, so it may be a question of first come, first serve. Thank you much. I'm going to hand over now to Jacqueline Jinks.
Thank you very much, Michael, and thank you all for your attendance. There are many distinguished individuals here at this meeting. You will allow me, please, to acknowledge Sir Jeremy Greenstock, former United Nations Ambassador, UK Ambassador, and above all, Lord Herbert Westwell, former British Foreign Secretary. The idea of this meeting arose really thanks to the greatest snowfall in 50 years, which fell on Jerusalem and the West Bank in December. And Chris Doyle of Kabu and Ava Shalom of Medigrade for Palestine had arranged a trip to Richard Burton, MP, and I'm glad to see Richard here. We were stuck in Jerusalem, not sure actually whether we'd ever get away, and so we had a very, very extended meeting over lunch discussing and trying to put the world to rights. And out of that meeting came the idea from that meeting that Nicola Harrison from UNRWA and her colleagues should bring a delegation of Palestinians, Bedouin, who are experiencing the reality of living under occupation. And under occupation, by the way, includes East Jerusalem, as well as the West Bank and Gaza. So here is the meeting. We're extremely grateful to UNRWA, to all colleagues in UNRWA, for organising this, not least and above all to Nicola. Rich and I saw our colleagues last night for dinner. I explained to them the absolute imperative that we stop at 2, that we start questions at 1:35, that my reputation as a chair rests on my calling duties to order. I have here for Arab speakers the Arabic to say, please stop now, 1 minute. So I'm going to stop now. That's the sum total of my Arabic. Shukran. And I'm going to ask Michael Schoeswell, who is Acting Senior Protection Coordinator UNRWA, to speak to us for 5 minutes. Michael, if you speak there, that'd be good. Thanks.
Well, good afternoon. It's a privilege to be here today, and I would like to thank you, especially Lord Lothian, for us giving us the opportunity to address this distinguished audience, as well as Mr. Jack Straw, of course, for having facilitated this. I should also acknowledge right at the outset that the UK is continuously supporting UNRWA, and very grateful for that. There is hardly any day when the Middle East is not in the news. We see reports on the peace talks. We read about approvals of settlement expansions and plans. We hear about the impact of the blockade and the escalation of violence in Gaza. And perhaps we talk also about the difficult situation of Palestine refugees more generally in a volatile region, including as a result of the ongoing conflict in Syria. There is lots of talk by the UN and others about protection priorities, the need for the international community to address them, and often there are emphatic calls for action. There is plenty of noise and the babble of voices, but how often do we hear the voices of Palestine refugees? And how does that noise translate into the situation on the ground? During the 1948 conflict, about 750,000 Palestinians were uprooted from their land and became Palestine refugees. There are about 5 million Palestine refugees registered with UNRWA and eligible to receive assistance and protection within the agency's five fields of operation, which, as you know, are the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. UNRWA does not only provide education, health, relief, and social services, microfinance, and other assistance, but also often acts as a voice to speak to key protection concerns. I would like to briefly highlight a number of them relating to the West Bank to set the scene for the testimonies to follow. We are seeing generally a widespread forced displacement in East Jerusalem and Area C, which consists of home evictions, demolition orders, the permit system, closure restrictions of movement, the barrier settlement expansion, settler violence, and the denial of basic services, which is driving communities off their land. Displacement in Area C, which constitutes 62% of the West Bank, continues at a faster rate than in East Jerusalem. Some 70% of this area is allocated within regional boundaries of settlements and is thus entirely off limits for Palestinian use. Less than 1% of Area C has been planned for Palestinian use and development. The planning and zoning regime currently in place is restrictive and does not operate to the benefit or the interest of the occupied population. Rather, it restricts Palestinian development while settlement expansion is ongoing. Since 1967, Israel has established about 150 settlements in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. In addition to some 100 outposts, the number of settlers in the OPT has passed the 500,000 mark. With regard to East Jerusalem specifically, while 35% of East Jerusalem has been appropriated for settlements, only 13% is zoned for Palestinian construction, much of which is already built up. In those areas where they are allowed to build, Palestinians face extreme difficulty obtaining a permit, and about 85,000 Palestinian residents are potentially at risk of having their homes demolished. Currently, over 1,500 demolition orders are pending implementation in East Jerusalem, and there has been an eightfold increase of refugee displaced in East Jerusalem in 2013. Of particular concern are plans by Israeli settler organizations to displace over 300 Palestinian residents in Sheikh Jarrah, a district in East Jerusalem, and Nabil will give us a detailed account of the situation there. In Area C, there are about 155 livestock-dependent communities that are particularly vulnerable, amongst them the Bedouin refugee population. A number of Palestine refugee Bedouin communities within the Jerusalem periphery in Area C have been under threat of being forcibly transferred, and Mohammed Al-Kushan will offer some testimony in that regard. Settler violence in the West Bank remains high. Throughout 2012 and up to October 2013, there has been a consistent weekly average of 7 settler-related incidents resulting in Palestinian casualties or property damage. Another factor to be highlighted is the ongoing construction of the West Bank barrier and its humanitarian impact on the lives and livelihood of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. When completed, approximately 15% of the barrier will be constructed on the Green Line or in Israel, with 85% on the eastern side of the Green Line. Since the beginning of 2013, UNRWA has observed a sharp increase in the number of Palestine refugees killed and injured during law enforcement activities in the West Bank. Notably, most fatalities and injuries have occurred in and around densely populated refugee camps, and Mohammed will share his perspective on life as a youth in a refugee camp. The rise in fatalities and injuries can be partially attributed to an increased use of live ammunition and improper use of crowd control measures. Most worryingly, there have been 27 Palestinian fatalities in 2013. Over half were Palestine refugees, including one UNRWA staff member. No refugees were killed by the Israeli security forces in 2012. The majority of Palestine refugees, ladies and gentlemen, will never get to tell the stories, even though each deserves to be told. Today we are fortunate to have three Palestine refugees with us from different communities in the West Bank. They will share their perspectives and those of the communities they represent. And I would like to thank them for being here with us today. Thank you.
Now it's my great pleasure to introduce Nicola Harrison, who will make her introductions, but also she's acting as interpreter and translator as well. Thanks, Nicola.
We'll try. I think really nothing more to add on the great introduction, except again to say thank you so much to our hosts for this excellent opportunity. We in UNRWA, part of our protection work in the West Bank, is to really make sure that Bedouin and all other Palestine refugee communities, whether they're urban or refugee camp residents, have the opportunity to speak and tell their own stories. So we're delighted, instead of us, the UN, going off telling everyone's stories, we're really happy to be able to support the delegation to say how their day-to-day life is affected by the occupation. So we will start with Mohammed Al-Qurshan, also known as Abu Suleiman, who will tell us the story of the Bedouin population. And we'll try to translate as we go along.
السيدات والسادة شكرا لكم لأعطانا الفرصة للتكلم. أنا أبو سليمان كرشان رئيس جمعية بدو القدس عضو لجنة حماية التجمعات البدوية في القدس.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mohammed Al-Qurshan Abu Suleiman. I am a member of the Bedouin Protection Committee in Jerusalem and I'm also the head of a Bedouin cooperative there.
البدو جزء من الشعب الفلسطيني ويحملون الجنسية الفلسطينية لاجئين منذ عام 1948 من مدينة بئر السبع جنوب فلسطين ويعتمدون على الثروة الحيوانية في حياتهم الاقتصادية.
The Bedouin are, we are originally from 1948, the area of Tel Arad, which is today in Israel. We were displaced after 1948 and we are livestock dependent pastoralists now living in the West Bank.
أكبر تجمع للبدو اليوم هو في منطقة القدس الشرقية والسبب هو أن القدس هي المركز الديني والتجاري والاقتصادي للشعب الفلسطيني.
One of the largest group of Bedouin Palestine refugees today living in the West Bank is in the eastern part of the Jerusalem periphery. This is so that we can be close to our cultural, religious and economic center, Jerusalem.
بعد عام 1967 أصبحت الحكومة الإسرائيلية تزيد المشاكل على البدو وتمنع المناطق الرعوية بحجة أنها مناطق عسكرية ومحميات طبيعية وأراضي مستوطنات وتم منع البدو من الوصول إلى هذه المناطق ومصادر المياه مما سبب مشاكل اقتصادية كبيرة للبدو.
After 1967, our problems started to really increase. The Israeli authorities started to build settlements, nature reserves, and military areas in the areas that we would naturally, with our livestock, access natural resources. So since then, our problems have been increasing.
وتم وضع البدو وحشرهم في تجمعات بدون بناء تحتية.
Today, we live in small communities without any infrastructure.
بعد اتفاق أوسلو بين إسرائيل والسلطة الفلسطينية تم تقسيم المناطق الفلسطينية إلى A و B و C حيث أصبح البدو متواجدين في المنطقة C التي هي تحت الاحتلال الإسرائيلي الكامل ويوجد في هذه المنطقة 23 تجمع بدوي عدد سكان 2300 عائلة و80 منهم لاجئين و80% منهم لاجئين.
After the Oslo agreements, we found ourselves living in an area called Area C after the West Bank was split up into three areas as a result of that agreement. One of the biggest groups of Bedouin today living in Area C is 23 communities, 2,300 people, approximately 80% refugee living on the eastern periphery of Jerusalem.
الحكومة الإسرائيلية تنوي ترحيل هذه التجمعات قسريا من منطقة القدس إلى قرية أنويعمة في وادي الأردن قرب أريحة.
Today the Israeli authorities are planning to transfer us from our current rural locations to an urban center in the Jericho area called Nuema.
الهدف من الترحيل هو تفريق أو إخلاء منطقة إيوان قرب معالي أدومين من أجل بناء مستوطنة في هذه المنطقة.
The whole reason for this type of transfer is so that the Israelis can build their E1 settlement, which is the expansion of the Maale Adumim settlement currently in the eastern periphery.
وإذا تم ذلك الترحيل، أولاً فإنه قضاء على الثقافة والعادات والتقاليد البدوية. ثم إن هذا فصل شمال الضفة الغربية عن جنوبها وعدم قيام دولة فلسطينية متماسكة.
For us, if we were transferred to an urban area, we would no longer be able to safeguard our specific and distinct culture and traditions as Bedouin people. The plan would also cut the north from the south of the West Bank.
ظروف البدو الاقتصادية والحياة الإنسانية صعبة جدا والذي يساعدهم على البقاء هو المساعدات والمناصرة من المنظمات والمؤسسات الدولية ثم المساندة والمناصرة من الهيئات الدبلوماسية والشخصيات المهمة مثل زيارة وزير الخارجية البريطاني السيد ويليام هيغ ورئيس البرلمان الأوروبي السيد شودز.
Life is getting much more tough for us. We are very much supported by international advocacy efforts and pressure from the international community. Recently, from the British side, we've been very much supported through a visit from the Right Honourable William Hague, and after that, from the European side, the President of the European Parliament, Schulz, visited us a few weeks ago.
والشيء المهم الذي نوصي به ونتمنى أولا أن يكون هناك ضغط سياسي من الحكومة البريطانية على الحكومة الإسرائيلية من أجل إلغاء الترحيل القسري للبدو في القدس.
We ask the British government to continue putting pressure on the Israeli government to stop the proposed transfer of Bedouin from the area of Jerusalem.
البدو لاجئين وواقعين تحت الاحتلال. نرجو أن يتم الضغط على الحكومة الإسرائيلية من أجل إعطائهم الحق الإنساني في التعليم والصحة والتنقل والعمل والسكن الإنساني وحمايتهم من عنف المستوطنين.
The Bedouin are refugees. We would like to return to our traditional territories, and until then we call for humanitarian support, for education, for health, for access to services and safety from settler violence.
شكرا لكم.
Thank you. شكرا.
And I am 23 years old. I live in Aida refugee camp in Bethlehem. My family came to the Aida refugee camp in 1948 after the Haganah, one of the Zionist armed gangs, attacked the camp. My grandfather survived, unlike many others, live in the village. I am very glad to have this opportunity today to talk in front of you about the youth who live in the camp. I would like to leave with you three messages today about the occupation and the resistance and my future. And I think the future will not hold hope for us without real peace. In 2002, the apartheid wall was illegally constructed and surrounded Aida camp from three sides. The wall surrounded and cut through all across the West Bank. In front of my house, just in front of me, just 20 steps in front of me, the apartheid wall surrounded the camp, and there are four watchtowers and three military bases. From these watchtowers and military bases, the soldier killed my families, my friends, and my neighbors. The wall left for the Palestinian, a great depression, and has stolen from us. The great political solution. Also, Aida camp has to be under the Palestinian jurisdiction, but it's been in Area A. However, the Israeli occupation entered the camp at will. In 2013, they entered the camp several times each week. We know they will come, but we will never know when. So these raids are hard for us, but it's not our greatest concern. We have experienced much worse. Snipers kill mother feeding her 4-month baby, and children has been killed and injured in the street, and another left handicapped, permanently handicapped. One of our issues in the camp, it's unemployment. Unemployment in Palestine, it's high. You will think it's because the global financial crisis. But in our case, it's not. It's because the soldier keep come to the camp to arrest young guys, and they stay a long period in the jail. And another had been injured, and we don't have, we can't access to have proper education. And also, we are unable to have to enter to Jerusalem to advantage the large market there. So the camp, it's a crowded place. There are no place, and there are no privacy between the families. We are just built on top of each other. So if you ask me, what does the occupation mean to me? It means I feel unsafe. I feel threatened by killed or arrested or detention anytime. I feel I can't get a job, and I cannot move freely like anyone. So what I am told you about, it's just a small piece of the puzzle. Suffering in Palestine, it's vast. We try and we must voice our resistance to the occupation, but unfortunately we can't, because the Israeli army faced this resistance by force and extreme violence. So I feel like Muhammad, and I don't have to justify the Palestinian resistance, because the occupation came before the resistance. So that means the occupation is the action, and it's illegal, and the resistance, it's for us, it's natural and legitimate according to international law. So would you not resist this occupation if you just live under, if you forced to live in camps like us for 65 years? Imagine, we are the refugees who live in the camps, millions, Syria, Jordan, Palestine, Lebanon, and the rest of the world, and all of them suffering since 1948 until now. And I want to ask you, how would you feel if the soldier broke into your house at 3 a.m. to arrest you as a parent or to arrest your child? And imagine if they put you under administrative detention. That means you will never know why you were arrested and how far long you will stay at the jail. I want to add something here also about the live ammunition. In 2013, when Mr. Kerry came, it's the year of the peace negotiation, the violence in the West Bank and Gaza Strip has been increased suddenly. We know that has been strategically designed by the Israeli occupation to show the world that the Palestinians are uncontrollable and terrorists who are not able of running our own state. So we keep asking ourselves what our future will hold for us. We are the refugees. I don't want to live in a refugee camp. I don't want violence. I don't want to live under occupation, because we forced to live and we pushed to live in these places, and these places have to be temporary places, but we still living there. And we feel we have abandoned by the international community, because they know all of this happening to us, and we still dying without any reason. So I will finish my story with three messages about the education. We just want in the occupation, about the justice, about the resistance, we want just the justice, and about our future, won't just normal life, just like you. I came to London just to say, it's your responsibility to do something for the Palestinian and the refugees who live in the West Bank and the rest of the world. It's your responsibility. That's it. Thank you.
السلام عليكم وشكرا لحضوركم والاستماع لنا من اللوتس.
First of all, hello. Thank you very much for coming to listen to us.
أنا نبيل الكرد فلسطيني مهجر من حيفا. أسكن مع عائلتي وبعض العائلات الفلسطينية في حي الشيخ جراح منذ سنة 56 بناء على اتفاقية بين الحكومة الأردنية والأنروا.
I am Nabil al-Kurd. I am a Palestinian displaced from Haifa. I live in my family, with my family and other families, in Sheikh Jarrah, as a result of UNRWA and the government of Jordan having an agreement in 1956.
حي الشيخ جراح حي فلسطيني قريب من قلب القدس الشرقية والذي يتم استيطانه الآن من قبل المستوطنين الإسرائيليين وبدعم من الحكومة الإسرائيلية وعلى الرغم من الوضع الخاص للحي باعتباره جزءا من القدس الشرقية والتي هي موجب القانون الدولي أرض محتلة.
Sheikh Jarrah is a Palestinian neighborhood at the heart of East Jerusalem, which is now being settled by Jewish Israelis with government support, despite its status as part of East Jerusalem under international law as occupied territory.
أتحدث إليكم بالنيابة عن نفسي بالإطالة عن نفسي وبالنيابة عن لجنة حي الشيخ جراح وسكان القدس الشرقية لأصرف لكم معاناتنا من الحكومة الإسرائيلية والمستوطنين في ثلاثة نقاط. أولا نزع الملكية، ثانيا حق الإقامة والنظام القانوني التمييزي العنصري وعنف المستوطنين.
I speak today for myself and for the neighborhood committee of Sheikh Jarrah and as a Palestinian citizen of East Jerusalem. I want to talk to you about our suffering with the Israeli government and Israeli settlers in three points. One, our dispossession. Two, our residency rights in a discriminatory legal system. And three, about the violence of Israeli settlers moving in by force.
بعد سنوات قليلة من احتلال القدس الشرقية والضفة الغربية سنة 67 ازدادت وطأة التهجير القسري وتفاقم الخطر على العائلات الفلسطينية في حي الشيخ جراح حتى بلغت الذروة في سنة 2008 حيث أخليت قصرا 12 عائلة من منازلها يزيد عددهم عن 70 شخصا وفيهم 25 من الأطفال. أنا وعائلتي فقدنا نصف منزلنا الذي أعطي للمستوطنين العنيفين في سنة 2009.
A few years after Israel occupied East Jerusalem and the rest of the West Bank, pressure of forced displacement started to grow and grow on Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah. The result in 2008 was a series of evictions affecting 12 Palestinian families, amounting to more than 70 people, including 25 children. My family was forced to give up half of my house to violent settlers in 2009.
ما زال الضغط مستمرا على سكان حي الشيخ جراح والآن توجد عائلتين في مركز الضوء لإخلائهم من منازلهم ونزع ملكيتهم وفي القائمة تسع عائلات تنتظر دورها هذا في الشيخ جراح فقط حيث ينتشر خطر الطرد والتهجير والإخلاء من جميع أنحاء القدس الشرقية وهناك ما لا يقل عن 90,000 مواطن فلسطيني في القدس عرضة لخطر التهجير من بيوتهم.
Dispossession in Sheikh Jarrah is still ongoing. Now there are two families in the spotlight with court procedures and a further 9 families are at risk after that. And that is only looking at Sheikh Jarrah. But the threat of dispossession, displacement and eviction is spread throughout East Jerusalem with at least 90,000 Palestinian residents at risk of displacement from their homes.
القوانين التي يستخدمها المستوطنون للمطالبة في بيوتنا في القدس الشرقية نحن كفلسطينيين لا نستطيع استخدامها لاسترجاع منازلنا التي فقدناها سنة 48 أرى أن هذا تمييز عنصري واضح في القانون الإسرائيلي القانون الإنساني والدولي والمعاهدات الدولية تضمن للمواطن حق العيش في بلاده حتى في ظل الاحتلال.
The rules which settlers use to claim our homes in East Jerusalem, we as Palestinians cannot use to reclaim our homes that we lost in 1948. I see this as clear discrimination inside Israeli law. International humanitarian law and international treaties guarantee that people have a right to live in their country, even under occupation.
في ظل النظام الإسرائيلي نحن كفلسطينيين يتم دفعنا للعيش في أماكن أخرى غير القدس وإذا انتقلنا إلى خارج القدس لأكثر من 7 سنوات نفقد الحق في العودة والعيش في المدينة وعلى صعيد آخر يتم تشجيع المستوطنين اليهود للانتقال والعيش في القدس والعودة إليها متى يشاؤون.
Under the Israeli system we are being pushed to live in places other than Jerusalem. And if we live abroad for more than 7 years, we lose permission to return. On the other hand, Jews are being encouraged to live in Jerusalem and to come here as much and whenever they want.
عنف المستوطنين هو مشكلة. المستوطنون الذي يسيرون من خلال حديقتي إلى الجزء المحتل من بيتي والذي حولوه إلى ثكنة من الشباب لديهم بنادق وكلاب مدربة واعتدوا علينا بالضرب عدة مرات وقد أدخلت والدتي 4 مرات إلى المستشفى وأختي 6 مرات من جراء اعتداء المستوطنين عليها وأستطيع أن أزيد أن أعطي المزيد من الأمثلة حول حوادث اعتداء المستوطنين على سكان الحي.
Settler violence is a key problem. The settlers who walk through my garden and who garrison the part of my house that they have taken are young men. They all have guns. They all have trained dogs and they beat us. My mother has been hospitalized by settlers 4 times and my sister 6 times. I can give many more examples about incidents with settlers in my neighborhood.
تستجيب الشرطة الإسرائيلية فورا لاتصال المستوطنين وتحضر إلى المكان في غضون 2 أو 3 دقائق وإذا نحن كفلسطينيين اتصلنا بنفس المركز تستغرق استجابتهم عدة ساعات هذا إذا كان هناك استجابة على الإطلاق.
The Israeli police respond immediately to emergency calls from settlers. They come within 2 or 3 minutes. If we, as Palestinians, call the same police station, it takes several hours, if they come at all.
ما ذكرته لكم هو الاعتداء الجسدي. ويمكن لكم أن تتخيلوا الآثار النفسية المرعبة جراء وجود المستوطنين وخاصة على الأطفال. كوابيس، تبول لا إرادي، الخوف من الخروج من المنزل ومشاكل أخرى كثيرة.
You can imagine the terrifying psychological impact of the presence of settlers on our children. My children suffer nightmares, my children wet their bed, and my children are afraid to leave their house.
لدينا طلب واحد من المجتمع الدولي، دعم الحق في العيش في القدس الشرقية وفلسطين، كما يدعم المجتمع الدولي حقوق اليهود في العيش في إسرائيل، ونحن نطلب حقنا في العيش بسلام في القدس. ولا ينبغي أن نرحل عنها بعيدا.
We have just one request for the international community. Support Palestinians' right to live in East Jerusalem and Palestine. Just as the international community supports the rights of Jews to live in Israel, we ask that our right to live in peace in Jerusalem not be taken away.
نشكركم على حسن الاستماع.
Thank you very much.
To all three of our visitors for very moving direct. For such very moving direct testimony. And I should say that Richard and I met Nabil and Nicola and colleagues last night, and I couldn't quite believe. I mean, not that I didn't believe it, but I couldn't understand what. Nabil was saying is how Israeli settlers had taken over half the house, but it was then described to me that Nabil and his family could show title to the main part of the house, but they built an extension, and those familiar with the law when the Jordanians were in occupation will know that every extension required a permit, but permits were extremely difficult to get hold of. For Israeli Jews who were in that situation, then they're given retrospective permission. But if you're Palestinian, you're denied that retrospective permission. So it was that, the fact that they didn't get a permit from the Jordanians, that led to these settlers finally obtaining title to half their house, which is the most extraordinary but totally unacceptable. I'm going to take questions. Now, I'd just like, sorry, I omitted one introduction, but His Excellency, the Ambassador of the Palestinian Authority, Mr. Hassassian, who is here at the front. Thank you, Excellency.
Thank you. You're very welcome.